haven't got to say hello to nearly as many of you as I would like to before our time is over, so please don't rush out. I'll just talk to one of you for the whole rest of the night, if you let me. I told Becky on the way up here, and I think that I have told her this probably a long time ago as well, but this congregation has turned into one of my favorite places to visit, probably my favorite place to visit. And I know that I've said this to you all before, but I want to tell you this again because I just love this, and it's something that keeps going and going and going. The first time that I came up here was in the fall of 2020. We were still doing COVID stuff then. You were in your pods whenever I was up here for that meeting. And I think that we figured it out. Well, I figured it out. You have told me how this happened. But at the time, Kurt had sent me an email and said, hey, you know, we'd like for you to come up and do this meeting. And I even asked Becky at the time, and I didn't know any of you. Well, I did, but I didn't know that I knew many of you. And so I was coming into a new place, and always within God's family, it's like, oh, hey, the world is a small place. Well, the family is a big family. And so we have lots of connections. But, you know, before the fall of 2020, I'm from Kansas City. I've lived in St. Louis for about 9 years now. But Illinois is kind of, I know that it's here. That's about the extent of it. You know, with churches, I guess we knew the Diesel Camps from Camp Directors Conference and stuff like that. David and Andy. David's Diesel Camp, right? Whatever. I knew them from Camp Directors. Anyway, since the fall of 2020, maybe it has always been this way and I just didn't know it, but our connections have just exploded. It seems like I see some of you at our congregation in St. Louis every couple months. I just saw you a couple weeks ago, and I see you guys every once in a while, and it's I've met some other people in this general, you know, within an hour or so driving distance, and I have just fallen in love with you all and with this area and with Christianity up here. And so I say all of that just to say two things. The first is, thank you for having me back. I love to come here, and I love to see you all and get to visit and catch up. Whenever you come through St. Louis or to St. Louis, I please come to Ellisville and see us and visit. Let me know you're coming. We'll get lunch or something whenever you're in town, but I love to see you all. Also, number two, since the fall of 2020, I've been telling you about my favorite people in my life, and you finally get to meet her. And so it's so weird. Like, I know that you would think, Brian, it's a little bit weird, but I've been giddy for a couple weeks now thinking, I get to show you to them, Becky. I really am married. Like, most of you are sitting there like, there's no way. There's no way. It's true. It's true. But thank you. All of that just to say thank you. It's good to be here tonight. And that is about as much positive, happy, good stuff as we're going to talk about tonight. So it's over. And I think that Kurt probably did that to me on purpose. I have a miserable subject. I take no pleasure in being the one to talk about this subject tonight. Let's talk about where we are. We started with David. I've listened to your lessons, and I've watched your outline and all of this stuff. I'll explain why the title's different in just a second. From like 1 Samuel 16, I think that's where we meet David. Everything about David is positive, except for two things. And I don't mean that everything's good. I mean, you've studied David now for all summer, I guess, and David's had a lot of bad times. But your opinion of him up to this point is good. Even in the hard times, David has been good. except for Uzzah, and I think the time when he pretended to lose his mind. That's not a positive thing in David's life. But everything else, even though he was struggling and running for his life and everything, seemingly almost everything was hard and bad, still David was good. And we had almost nothing but positive things to say about David up until last week when Andy came. Andy ruined everything for this, because whenever we get to 2 Samuel 11, there's the story of David and Bathsheba. And I'm not going to redo the David and Bathsheba thing. But that is, it's like this. Here's what we've done in this study. From 1 Samuel 16 and the whole story of David, we've done this. And it really is kind of like this, because it's not just that the things in his life are positive, even if things are bad, but his life gets better as he ascends to the throne and he conquers his enemies and the kingdom settles down and God makes his promises to him. Things have gone like this for David. And right up here at the top of that is his sin with Bathsheba and the things that he does to try and cover that up. And my subject that I have been assigned tonight is Absalom, which I am going to cover. But Absalom is only one part of what's happening here in this section of text. From chapters 12 to 21, David has done this up to this point, and he messed up bad, and everything just falls apart. And so, yes, Absalom is a huge part, the biggest part of that. But what I'm going to do tonight is I'm going to talk about this, repercussions. I started with this. This was my first title for the lesson, consequences, because that's a word that's a regular part of my vocabulary. And so I was going to talk about consequences. But I looked it up. I'm not trying to be nitpicky here, but follow with me for just one second. You get on Google and you say, define consequences. And this is what you get from that. A result or effect of an action. A result or an effect of an action. I went with repercussions, though, because listen to the definition. Go to Google. Define repercussions. Here's what this is. An unintended consequence occurring sometime after an event or action, especially an unwelcome one. What we're going to talk about on the downhill slide of David's life up to about chapter 21, because you got a lesson in 24 coming next week on Araunah, and then 21 through 1 Kings 2 on David's legacy after that. So I'm just going to kind of overview this section that talks about the repercussions of David's sin. And it all starts here in 2 Samuel chapter 12 and verses 9 through 14. Read that with me. I know that Andy read that with you last week, but I want to go over this again. 2 Samuel chapter 12, starting in verse 9. Why have you despised the word of the Lord to do what is evil in his sight? You have struck down Uriah the Hittite with the sword and have taken his wife to be your wife and have killed him with the sword of the Ammonites. Now, therefore, the sword shall never depart from your house. This is where you start making your bullet list. As a result of David's sin with Bathsheba and everything that came after that, what did God say is going to happen? So start your bullet point list. Number one, in verse 10. The sword shall never depart from your house because you have despised me and have taken the wife of Uriah to be your wife. Thus says the Lord, behold, two, I will raise up evil against you out of your own house. You automatically, there's no problems like family problems. Like, I can have problems at work. I can have problems at church. I think church problems are worse than work problems. You can make this like a list, a hierarchy of badness. Work problems, but, you know, I get paid to go to work and then I get to come home, whatever. Church problems are almost the worst. But family problems. And God tells David, because of what he did to somebody else's family, your family is broken. And you don't have to live through very much of that for your stomach to drop through the floor when we say those words. Because, David, now you're about ready to enter into a stage of life with family problems. Oh man, this is a nightmare. He's about ready to step into a nightmare, and it's not going to end. It's a nightmare that he doesn't wake up from. It just keeps on going. Where am I? Verse 11. Thus says the Lord, behold, I will raise up evil out of your own house. Behold, and I will take your wives before your eyes and give them to your neighbor, and he shall lie with your wives in the sight of the sun. For you did it secretly, but I will do this thing before all Israel and before the sun. David said to Nathan, I have sinned against the Lord. And Nathan said to David, thus says the Lord, has also put away your sin. You shall not die. Nevertheless, because by this deed you have utterly scorned the Lord, the child who is born to you shall die. And so I think if you go through that list of what we just read, I think you can make 5 bullet points of things that Nathan says are going to happen to David, and we're going to call those repercussions tonight. There's something about these repercussions, though, that I want you to look for. One thing, I'm going to probably make it to the second point before I can't stand it any longer and just go ahead and say it, but what is the thing that ties all of these together? I want you to look at that. Number one, let's talk about this. Nathan said, the child that was conceived and born with Bathsheba, that is the fruit of this sin that David committed, Nathan said, that child is going to die. And there are the verses on the board, chapter 12 and verses 15 through 23. I'm just going to assume that most people at least are halfway familiar enough so we don't have to read all of these passages, because I really do have way too much. We're going to fill up this left side. It's going to be full when we're done of repercussions. And I told Kurt, what do I have to do to beat Rick's time record? If I read all of the passages, then I definitely will. But I'll try not to do that. We'll move through this pretty quick here. But look at verse 22. Verse 22 is the thing that I want you to notice. David is mourning. He's praying to God, and he's fasting. Please, God, don't let this child die as a result of my sin. And then the child dies, and the people come to David, and they say, hey, why were you doing that? You were fasting while the child was still alive, and now the child has died, and you're okay. And listen to David's explanation here in verse 22. He said, while the child was still alive, I fasted and wept, for I said, who knows whether the Lord will be gracious to me that the child may live. Nope. Think about that for 1 second. David is fasting. I think about Jesus praying in the garden. Every single thing about his entire being is praying, please God, save me from this situation that I've created where the child's going to die. And God says, no. I told you that you're going to pay the price for your sin, and this is number one. Repercussion number one, an unwelcome, unintended consequence. I thought about this when we were singing the song tonight. I think it's song number 23, it was the third verse. Remember not the sins of my youth. Sing it again. Remember not the sins of my youth. And in David's case, in this situation, God says, no, you're going to pay for it. So we're going to keep on moving. In chapter 13, the next thing that happens is that David's son, firstborn son Amnon, rapes David's daughter. Different mom, same dad. David's son rapes David's daughter, Tamar. So chapter 13 in verses 1 and 2. Now, Absalom, David's son, had a beautiful sister whose name was Tamar. And after a time, Amnon, David's son, loved her. And Amnon was so tormented that he made himself ill because of his sister Tamar, for she was a virgin, and it seemed impossible to Amnon to do anything to her. So here's the thing. I told you that I'm probably not going to be able to hold this in very long, and now it's just, I can't. We're going to have to talk about this. when we talk about repercussions, we read in 2 Samuel 12 that God said, you're going to pay the price, and this is what it's going to be. The sword's not going to depart from your house. You're going to have all kinds of family problems. The child's going to die. That you had these wives, and I'm going to take them and do this thing publicly in front of everybody. All of this is punishment from God. But here's the thing that I want you to notice about every single one of these circumstances. David is reaping what he has sown throughout his life. These are the consequences and the repercussions that David thought he was going to get away with. And maybe he would have, at least in this life, if it were not for this sin. And this is the thing that I want you to ask yourself. With the Amnon raping Tamar situation, where do you suppose Amnon learned about this kind of behavior? Where do you suppose the firstborn son of King David learned about looking at a beautiful woman? Those are key words. They ought to sound familiar with David and Bathsheba and how that story started, and Amnon and Tamar and how that story started. Where do you think Amnon learned about looking at a beautiful woman and taking her just because you want to? Wait, there's nothing right about this. And the answer is obvious. This is exactly what David did with Bathsheba. Where do you suppose that Amnon learned these things? And you come down to verses 11 through 14. This is what Tamar says to her brother. And as we read verses 11 through 14, I want you to think about this. Almost every single thing that she says to her brother is something that Bathsheba could have said to David. Look at it, listen to it from that lens, from that angle, starting in verse 11, chapter 13, verse 11. When she brought them near him to eat, he took hold of her and said, "Come, lie with me, my sister." And she answered, "No, my brother, do not violate me." Bathsheba could have said that. "No, do not violate me, for such a thing is not done in Israel." Bathsheba could have said that. "Do not do this outrageous thing." Bathsheba could have said that. And the whole thing is, where do you think Amnon learned this behavior? Verse 13. "As for me, where could I carry my shame?" Bathsheba could have said that. "And as for you, you would be as one of the outrageous fools in Israel." Yep. "Now therefore, please speak to the king, for he will not withhold me from you." That probably wouldn't fit with Bathsheba. Verse 14, "But he would not listen to her, and being stronger than she, he violated her and lay with her." Now, I'm not trying to say that the David and Bathsheba situation is comparable to the rape here between Amnon and Tamar, but the impropriety and the looking, a man in a position of power, looking at a beautiful woman and saying, "I don't care how wrong this is or whether or not it's right or wrong. I see someone beautiful, and so I'm going to take her." Where do you suppose Amnon? And so here David is faced with this. Can you imagine? Imagine that you're the dad and one of your sons rapes one of your daughters, and you're David, the dad in this situation. Both of your kids are in a heap of trouble because of this thing that's happened. And if you're David, you're looking at yourself thinking, "Yeah, I mean, that's kind of the same way that I've behaved in my life." You see what I'm talking about? He's reaping what he has sown, at least in his sin with Bathsheba. There's one thing that I want to show you in this, and this is just, I think this is the core problem here in verse 17. Amnon called the woman, the young man who served him, and said, "Put this woman out of my presence and bolt the door after her." In the Hebrew, whenever you look at it in Hebrew, the word woman is not there. I wish that they would have translated it the way that the Hebrew reads, because in verse 17, this is what Amnon says: "Put this out of my presence." She's not even a person. She's a thing to be used for his own gratification and own personal desire, which is exactly what David did with Bathsheba. Okay, so jump down to chapter 13 and verse 21. This is next.
When King David heard all these things, he wasn't in the dark about it. He heard about it. He was the king. He knows what's going on. It says in verse 21, when King David heard of all these things, he was very angry. I hope that you're sitting there saying, okay, Ryan, finish the sentence. No, that's the end of the sentence. But what did he do about it? No, that's the end of the sentence. That's it. He was angry. He didn't do anything about it, is the point. Now, you might have a note in your Bible. There's a textual issue here. In my English Standard Version, I have a note that says, the Dead Sea Scroll and the Septuagint add, but he would not punish his son Amnon because he loved him since he was his firstborn. So some texts have tried to, I think this is what's going on, have tried to supplement the sentence that David was angry because you can't just end the sentence there. Your son just raped your daughter and David was angry. And so here are these people trying to say, well, here's the thing. David loved his son, and because of that, he did this. And the text just doesn't tell us why David didn't do anything about this. Maybe it was because he was not able to call balls and strikes on his own kid. I've seen parents like that. I wonder, though, if it was because he was paralyzed from knowing that what he watched his own kids do is what he himself was guilty of, and also knowing good and well that this is a result of what God said was going to happen because of his sin. You're going to have family problems. Chapter 13, starting in verse 23. Tamar's brother was Absalom. And so the story with the rape of Tamar really sets up this horrible series of events. Let's read chapter 13 and verse 23. We'll jump around here just for the sake of time. After two full years, Absalom had sheep shears at Baal Hazor, which is near Ephraim, and Absalom invited all the king's sons. Jump down to verse 27 through 29. But Absalom pressed his father David until he let Amnon and all the king's sons go with him. Then Absalom commanded his servants, mark when Amnon's heart is merry with wine, and when I say to you, strike Amnon, then kill him. Do not fear. Have I not commanded you? Be courageous and valiant. So the servants of Absalom did to Amnon as Absalom had commanded. Then all the king's sons arose, and each mounted his mule and fled. So let's do the same thing with what Absalom did to his brother Amnon. Where do you think Absalom learned about premeditated conspiracy to murder somebody? Remember the David and Uriah situation that came after Bathsheba? Where do you think Absalom learned about getting this person drunk in order to move forward with your sinful, evil plans? When you read this story, you're reading about David's life and his kids. David's mistakes and David's sins have been passed down to his kids, and now David is having to live with the repercussions that God is using to say, this is why you should not have done this thing. Where do you think he learned about premeditated conspiracy to murder? Where do you think he learned about getting somebody drunk in order to accomplish a sinful plan? Where do you think he learned about having somebody else do the sinful murder for you? Well, that's exactly what David did as well. It's the same story, just a different person doing the thing. And here's another thing that I want to say. It's not up on the board, but I want you to consider this. Both of these things, Amnon, David's son, raping Tamar, David's daughter, Absalom, David's son, killing Amnon, another one of David's sons, rape within the family. Rape is, I don't have to say, like, awful doesn't do justice. Rape within the family? Like, we just turned up the volume. Murder is awful. But murder within the family? A brother who murders another brother. I mean, this is awful. And so Andy talked about this last week, and so I won't read about it. I'll just point you to it. David's sin with Bathsheba and what he did
to cover it up was horrible by any measurement, by any standard. But remember when Andy talked about this? Bathsheba's dad was one of David's mighty men. That, what he did was awful. That makes, that's like an extra sin on top of the whole thing. You're not just doing this to Bathsheba, you're doing it to one of your own men. It's betrayal on top of that. Uriah, Bathsheba's husband, one of David's mighty men. Ahithophel, Bathsheba's grandpa, David's most trusted advisor. And here's the point with all of this. It's not just that these things happen, it's the degree. Rape within the family, murder within the family. What David did to Bathsheba, to two of his mighty men, and to his most trusted advisor, you got to be in an extra special place of, I just do not care to do something like that. And look, now he's reaping what he's sown. He's suffering the consequences of his own family who says, I do not care. I want this thing, so I'm going to do it. And so David's response, or I suppose David's lack of response, chapter 13 and verse 38, at the end of this story. So Absalom fled and went to Geshur and was there 3 years. And the spirit of the king longed to go out to Absalom because he was comforted about Amnon, since he was dead. Now Joab, I'm jumping into chapter 14, Joab the son of Zeruiah knew that the king's heart went out to Absalom. Wait a minute. Do you realize, like, David's job is not to... This is what a king does. This is what a ruler does. You'll sign checks every once in a while because, you know, you got to do that as a part of your job. A king's job, the reason why he exists, is to administer God's justice. And here, for a second time, he chose to do nothing. Now I know, good and well, and that some of you after this lesson are going to say, well, I mean, if it was my kid, I'm with you. Like, I got it. If this happens in your family, your whole family's falling apart. And it's David's job to give his own son, the next in line, by the way, the death penalty for the sin that he's committed. I'm not saying that this is easy stuff. What I am saying is, David made his bed, and this story is the story of him having to lie in it. And he fails again and again and again. You come over to chapter 14. I just for the sake of time, something has to give in this lesson. We're going to fill up this side, and so I'm not going to spend any time going through chapter 14, but I want to tell you a couple things about it just as we move through really quick. Joab gets a woman from Tekoa to go to David and basically do a Nathan, where she tells him a story and David is convicted and acts because of that story. And so this woman from Tekoa goes and says, I have two sons, and one of my sons rose up against another son in a fight and accidentally killed him. So one of my kids is dead. And now the men of the town want justice for the one who accidentally killed the other brother. They want to put him to death. So David, here's my problem. I'm about to lose my second son. And on top of that, I'm not going to have an heir in my house. I'm going to lose all my property too. Also. And so she comes to David with this story. Now, I'll tell you this as you read through this story and try and figure out what's going on here. Number one, I do not think Joab is a good guy in the story of David. And he's the one who orchestrated this. And so as you read it, you can think, okay, you know, that kind of sounds good. There's a really pretty verse in this section, too, about being poured out on the ground and all that. I don't think Joab is a good guy, and I don't think that what Joab produced in this chapter is a good thing. It's not an apples-to-apples story. The woman from Tekoa tells a story about manslaughter. One brother accidentally killed another brother. That is not what happened with Absalom and Amnon. That was first-degree, premeditated, on-purpose murder. And so this is not an apples-to-apples story. Anyway, there's a couple things to look at in chapter 14 and verse 9. One of the things that the woman says to David about her situation in this story, and now remember,
David is the woman in this story. In verse 9, listen to what she says. The woman of Tekoa said to the king, "On me be the guilt, my lord the king, and on my father's house. Let the king and his throne be guiltless." The woman says, David, as probably most of us as parents would feel in a situation like this, this is my fault. And at least this part of the story, she is absolutely right. David, this is your fault. You created this. It didn't happen to you. You made it. And now you're going to get to live with the repercussions. Here's another thing that I think is irony. Chapter 14 and verse 24, David says, okay, fine, Absalom can come back home. But he doesn't let him live. He says, you can come back home, that's fine, but you can't see my face. And so David's going to kind of, he's going to try and stand on both sides of the fence here. He's going to say, you're guilty, you can't see my face, but you're not guilty, you can come back home. In verse 24, the king said, let him dwell apart in his own house. He is not to come into my presence. So Absalom lived apart in his own house and did not come into the king's presence. Then you jump down to verse 32, the second part of verse 32. Absalom has to burn a field down to get his dad's attention. And he says, it would be better for me to still be there in Geshur. Now, therefore, let me go into the presence of the king. And if there is guilt in me, let him put me to death. That's about the truest thing that's said in this story. If I'm guilty, then put me to death. And if I'm not, then don't halfway treat me like I'm innocent. It either is or it isn't. And the point is this is a mess. That's the point. The point is, this is a mess in David's house and David's kingdom and David's family. And it's all because of his sin with Bathsheba. And so chapters 15, oh yeah, just a reminder. The sword shall never depart from your house. Behold, I'll raise up evil against you out of your own house. Don't you imagine those words just rang in his ears every single day? So here we go. Absalom's conspiracy. Chapter 15 through 17. David's son. This is another thing, man. You got to feel this. If you're a king and somebody rises up against you and tries to take your throne and you got to run for your life, that's horrible. But that's one thing. If it's your own son doing it, that's a whole different, like, that's a whole different thing. That's my kid making me run for the hills. And so Absalom does this conspiracy. David has to run for his life, and it's awful. You know what I want to tell you about with this, with Absalom conspiracy? I tried to practice this and how I would say it to you, and there's no way that I could do it with words. So I put it on a chart, and I ran through it with a chart, and it still is confusing. So stick with me. Wake up here. Wake up for like 3 minutes and think of this with me. We're going to talk about a timeline. Also, this is like provisional, right? I don't know exactly where these numbers fall. Some of them, anyway. David's sin with Bathsheba. How long does it take a woman to be pregnant, have a baby? 9 months, right? So she gets pregnant, has the baby. The baby lives for a while, and then the baby dies as punishment. We already talked about that. I'm just calling that 1 year. I think I preached a sermon about this in the past, and I've got notes about a better number than 1 year, but I couldn't find it to save my life, so we're going with 1 year right now. It's been 1 year since David's sin. These are the verses. I highlight these things in my Bible. In 13:23, I highlighted 2 years. It says 2 years. Amnon raped Tamar. How long after the baby died did Amnon rape Tamar? I don't know what that time frame is. I'm just going to assume it happened right after the baby died. For the sake of our chart, it's just right after the baby died is what we're going to assume here. He rapes Tamar. Absalom waited for 2 years to kill him and then ran for the hills. This is what matters. That means it's been 3 years since he sinned. Okay? We're not done yet. Then Absalom runs to Geshur. And 13:38 says that he's there for 3 years. That means his sin with Bathsheba happened 6 years ago. You follow me on the chart, what we're looking at here? Then David brings Absalom back with no contact. 14:28 says that he lives back in Jerusalem with no contact for 2 years. That means it's been 8 years since his sin.
then he burns the field down, gets his dad's attention. David says, okay, fine, we can be reunited. I think that's a problem by itself, separate sermon. Chapter 15 and verse 7, though, says they lived reunited for 4 years. That's 12 years since David sinned. And now Absalom has risen up against his dad and David's running for his life. So 12 years is like a minimum, an absolute minimum number in this scenario. So here's what I want you to do. I want you to think about, where are we right now? 2022, August 2022. Where were you 12 years ago? And I don't mean like where, what room were you sitting in or anything like that. Just think about your life 12 years ago. Were you married? Did you have kids? How old were your kids? What grade were they in? That kind of thing. Where were you 12 years ago? Imagine your life 12 years ago. It's hard for me to even try and imagine 12 years ago in my life. But here's the point. What sin did you commit 12 years ago that you are still bitterly paying the price for today? I'm not talking about a little bit paying the price for. David just lost his kingdom and he's running for his life as a result of sin, as a result of sin, as a result of sin that causes Absalom to raise up against his dad. 12 years later, David's running for his life and he's like, yep, I shouldn't have done that thing with Bathsheba 12 years ago, minimum 12. Think about that. This is not like little consequences, repercussions. 12 years of fresh, really bad stuff that David's having to live with. I think as you go throughout this lesson, one of the things that we think about is the justice of God and the promise that he said, you're going to pay the price for this sin. And sure enough, David is paying the price for the sin. So we're going to keep on rolling here. As David is leaving town, because Absalom has taken his throne, he stops at the last house and all the people are filing past him. And some of the people are Zadok, the priest, with the ark. And he comes back and he says, okay, we're coming with you and we're bringing the ark. And David says, no, 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 we're not going to do that. The important part about this, look at this with me. Chapter 15, verses 25 through 26. Listen to David's words. Then the king said to Zadok, carry the ark of God back into the city. If I find favor in the eyes of the Lord, he will bring me back and let me see both it and his dwelling place. But if he says, I have no pleasure in you, behold, here I am. Let him do to me whatever seems good to him. It seems like 12 years plus, possibly, down the road, David has come to a spot where he says, I created this mess. Let come whatever will. He's just ready to face it. Like, it's not going to be fun, but he knows he did this. If God's going to do this to me, then God's going to do this to me. And this is what's going to have to happen. Look at chapter 15 and verse 30. David went up the ascent of the Mount of Olives, weeping as he went, barefoot. How can you not think about Jesus whenever you read this story? It's a separate conversation, but at least think about it. He's barefoot with his head covered, and all the people who were with him covered their heads as they went up, weeping as they went. David is miserable, and he knows that it's his fault, and he looks around, and he sees that it's not just him suffering the consequences of his sin. He's created misery for a whole lot of other people because of one bad choice. One choice to commit sexual sin that led to another thing, that led to another thing, that led to another thing, and here we are. And then, chapter 15 and verse 31, David was told Ahithophel is among the conspirators with Absalom. That's Bathsheba's grandpa. Somebody comes and says to David, hey, guess what? Ahithophel has turned on you. Absalom has the throne and Ahithophel is advising him. Ahithophel is like the Michael Jordan of advisors in David's day. I said Michael Jordan and not LeBron on purpose, for those of you who want to know. When somebody comes up to David and says, hey, Ahithophel is with Absalom, I can imagine that David was like, yeah, I wondered when he would get me back. I created this one too. This is my fault.
I did this. Chapter 16, verses 5 through 11. Let's actually read this whole section.
When King David came to Bahurim, there came out a man of the family of the house of Saul, whose name was Shimei, the son of Gera. And as he came, he cursed continually, and he threw stones at David and all the servants of King David, and all the people and all the mighty men were on his right hand and on his left. And Shimei said as he cursed, get out, you man of blood. You are a worthless man. Hey, don't you know David already felt that? And now somebody's saying it out loud. The Lord has avenged on you all the blood of the house of Saul, in whose place you have reigned, and the Lord has given the kingdom into the hand of your son Absalom. See, your evil is on you, for you are a man of blood. Then Abishai, the son of Zeruiah, said to the king, why should this dead dog curse my lord the king? Let me go over and take off his head. But the king said, what have I to do with you, you sons of Zeruiah, if he's cursing because the Lord has said to him, curse David? Then who shall say, what have you done so? Read verse 11 with me and think about. Don't just hear the words. Think about David's state of mind. 12 years down the road, suffering all the consequences of all his sin. Verse 11. And David said to Abishai and to all his servants, behold, my own son seeks my life. How much more now may this Benjaminite? Leave him alone, let him curse, for the Lord has told him to. That's David saying, I know why this is happening. And he knows that he's responsible for it. Chapter 16, verses 21 and 22. I don't know how we could skip over this section. I mean, this is just blatant, right out there. Ahithophel said to Absalom, go into your father's concubines whom he has left to keep the house, and all Israel will hear that you have made yourself a stench to your father. And the hands of all who are with you will be strengthened. So they pitched a tent for Absalom on the roof, and Absalom went into his father's concubines in the sight of all Israel. Remember this? That's exactly what God said was going to happen at least 12 years ago plus. And the main point here is, David, listen, I'm gonna have something to say about this in a second. I want you to hear this part. David, you might have thought you did this thing in secret and that nobody knew about it. You might have thought you were going to get away with it. But your punishment is going to be public. I'm going to do it on the roof of the house, and the whole kingdom is going to know. And you don't even have to wonder about it, because here we are. We just read about it. God doing what he said he was going to do. Chapter 18 and verse 33. David's armies go out to fight against his own son, Absalom. And remember, David says, please, if there is any way that you can be merciful to him and not kill him, please, for my sake, do it. Joab is not having any part of it. Runs spears through him, kills David's son. Word comes back to David, and this is the end of that. Chapter 18 and verse 33. And the king was deeply moved and went up to the chamber over the gate and wept. And as he wept, man, how can anybody read these verses without feeling that crying pit in your stomach start to well up? A dad crying out for his son. Oh, my son, I don't care. I don't care what Absalom has done up to this point. It is his son who's dead. Oh, my son Absalom, my son Absalom. Would I had died instead of you, O Absalom, my son. David wasn't crying in this story because his son was dead. He was crying in this story because his son was dead and it was his fault. And he knew it. Here's David crying out, I wish that I would suffer the consequences and not my own son. And then, let me just throw these up here real quick. I won't do these verses. But as you continue to read, I don't think that we're supposed to read this story and say, okay, here's what happens next in the story. I think we're supposed to think all the way back to the beginning, because what's happening in these next four chapters, 19, 20, 21, David is starting from scratch. We go all the way back to the beginning. He has to win his own people, Judah, again. Remember, there's a civil war, an uprising of Israel. He has to win Israel again. Remember how David became king in the first place? He had to deal with Saul and Saul's sin. He's got to deal with Saul and Saul's sin again. I thought we were past that. Remember this when we started this lesson? David was ascending. He made it to the very top and he was at peace. He conquered all of his enemies. God was making him his promises. All this stuff was taken care of. It was done in the books. And so he has to start over and win his people, win Israel. He has to deal with Saul again. He had the Philistines defeated. And there's even a story in chapter 21 that sounds identical to the David and Goliath story. He's got to go back to the beginning and do it all over again. That's the point. As you read through some of these repercussions, look at that list. Don't just like vaguely, abstractly look at the list. Look at every single one of the... Feel the pain of every single thing on that list. And I want you to think about something. Don't you imagine at some point in David's life... I don't know... I would imagine it was when Nathan was still talking. But if not, I would imagine it started whenever his baby died. Back in chapter 12. I don't know when this was. At some point in David's life, for all these years and for all these things, don't you know that David regretted that sin every single day of his life? Remember the thing that Andy said, the old preacher story? I don't know what it is. Becky always has to help me out with this one. Sin will take you farther than you want to go, keep you longer than you want to stay. This is the last one. It'll cost you more than you want to pay or intend to pay. Who would have guessed when David was standing on that roof looking at a beautiful woman, he said, hey, you know what I'd like to do with her? Who would have guessed that the price of that decision would be that? You think he'd take it back if he could? If David were able to rewind the clock and say, not worth it, think he'd go back in time? Four things. Just four really quick things, and then I'll finish. How am I doing with Rick? I'll make number two and number three pretty quick. I'm going to reload here, though. Okay, number one. I tell this to my kids all the time. Turn to Psalm 73 with me, please. I learned this when I was a teenager. I learned it even more when I was a police officer doing police work. And I tell my kids all the time. And I'm not just saying it to threaten them and trying to keep them from stuff. I want them to really know that this is true. Everybody always gets caught. Everybody always gets caught. No exceptions. It's on the board up there. No exceptions. And I think of a couple different things when this pops up. You know what Ashley Madison is when I say that? It's okay to shake your head. I'm not like setting a trap for you here when I talk about Ashley. Ashley Madison was this website, I don't know how many years ago it was. It was an adultery website. And what happens is I get on this adultery website and I say, hey, here's where... It's like dating but for cheating. That's what the purpose of this website is. Here's who I am and here's where I live. And you say, here's who I am and this is where I am. And the website says, hey, you're close together. Here you go. And does the work for you. We both know what we're looking for. Puts us together. We're close together and all this. That website was operational for a while, and then guess what? It got hacked. And now there's a website. I'm not going to tell you what the website is. You can Google it and find it yourself. There's a website where somebody hacked Ashley Madison and put everybody who had registered for that website's information, profile information, email address, and all that on the internet. And you can find it right now. Like, you can get on the internet and say, hey, I want to know if XYZ has registered for an account with Ashley Madison. You just sit there and you just run through everybody's email address that you know, and it'll tell you if it pops up or not. And that's just one example. I don't know how it's going to be or where it's going to be or what it's going to be, but everybody gets caught. Always. I'll throw this one out to you, because when it happens, I'm predicting the future here, which you know good and well I'm not capable of doing. But this is my prediction. And I tell you this because anytime temptation crosses my plate, this is one of the things that helps me, and so I hope that it helps you. What's going to happen when that same thing happens to Google? Imagine this. Just imagine a world where there's a website where I can get on and I can say, I want to know every single thing you've ever searched for on Google. How many of us would be in bad shape? I don't know what it's going to be, but everybody gets caught. And you say, well, not everybody, Ryan. Sometimes people don't caught. Yes, they do. Look at this. That's why we're at Psalm 73 right now. This is what Asaph was saying, starting in verse 1. Truly, God is good to Israel, to those who are pure in heart. But as for me, God's good to his people, but not me. My life has been awful, and everything's been bad. As for me, my feet had almost stumbled. My steps had nearly slipped. And then he says, and I looked at the arrogant when I saw the prosperity of the wicked. And verse 4, he says, look at all of those bad people out there who do bad things, and they get away with it. Their life is perfectly good. I'm a good guy, and my life is miserable, and you're a bad guy, and you're prospering. And he goes through this psalm, and then you come down to verse 16. But when I thought how to understand this, it seemed to me a wearisome task. Listen to this. Until I went into the sanctuary of God, and then I discerned their end. That's the author of Psalm 73 saying they're going to get theirs too. It might be after this life, but they're going to get caught. And they're going to have to answer for their sin. Everybody always gets caught. We're all going to answer for our sin. For we must all appear before the judgment seat of Christ, so that each one may receive what is due for what he has done in the body. David, receive what is due. That's the whole list. Receive what is due for what he has done in the body, whether good or evil. And that's probably enough passages right now, but I want to show you one more just because it sounds so much like what we've been talking about tonight. Listen to Jesus. Nothing is covered up that will not be revealed, or hidden that will not be known. Therefore, whatever you have said in the dark shall be heard in the light, and what you have whispered in private rooms shall be proclaimed on the housetops. David. Guess what? That's my sin too. I'm going to answer for it. You're going to answer for your sin. We all are. We're going to stand before God, and he's going to say, I want you to tell me about that. It's at least something we're thinking about on a pretty regular basis. The next time you're tempted, and the next time that sin knocks on your door, and you're standing on your rooftop or sitting in front of your computer, and you see something and think, hey, I'd like to investigate that just a little bit more. Remember, you're going to get caught, and you're going to have to pay for it. Number two, David's repercussions did not only come from what he did, they came from what he did not do. Remember when Amnon raped Tamar and he got mad about it? Good story. What did you do? Nothing. Remember when Absalom killed his own brother, Amnon, and David didn't do anything about it? Remember those two things? And they just kept building and growing until David had to pay the price. And that could be its own lesson all by itself. In fact, I hope somebody does that. I hope that somebody talks about that lesson all by itself. But the thing that I think about, only because this is where I am in my own life right now,
the sin that I commit, I'm going to get caught. I'm going to have to pay for that sin. But the things that I should be doing, I think about as a dad right now, I got my three kids still at home. The things that I should be doing that I don't, for whatever reason, I'm going to have to pay for that too.
I know sitting on the couch eating popcorn, watching Netflix sounds good at the end of a long day when you just want to relax and you don't want to deal with the kids because I've been doing everything else for every other person all day long, all week long. I just want to sit here, but you have a job to do, dads. And when you neglect to do your job, it comes back to bite you. I have a story in my notes, but I'm not gonna take the time to talk about that. But we've all watched it. We've all watched the parents of unfaithful kids, for whatever reason, who regret what they did not do that they should have done.
Number three, our sin affects way more than just ourselves.
What a relief it would have been to David if only he had paid the price for his sin. Even if it was twice as long as the list on the board. But he didn't just have to pay the price for his sin. He had to watch other people suffer for it too. And that's real life. You got to know that whenever you sin, whatever it is, that sin does not only affect you. It affects your family. It affects your church. It affects the people who know you, maybe their impression of God. That's one of the exact things that Nathan said to David. You regarded God as unholy. You caused others to blaspheme God, and so David's consequence is others will blaspheme you. Maybe it's the people in our lives that we cause to blaspheme God. Whatever. Our sin affects way more than just ourselves. And finally, would you please think about this? If this is the only thing that you take away from this lesson, would you please let it be this? It's last on purpose because I want you to consider this last thing. Would you count the cost? I'm begging you. One more time. Here's David. Put yourself in his shoes. Standing on his roof. Not looking for trouble. There she is. And his eyes linger a little too long. And he has a choice to make. Now this is what you would do if you're a movie. Like if you're a producer and you're able to like pause. We can stop the movie at that spot. You're David and you're looking at sin and you think, I'd really like to do that thing. But in your mind, David, at this point in the movie, you know what it's going to cost you. I can promise you, there is no force in heaven or on earth that could keep David from running as fast and as far away from that rooftop as he possibly could. He's looking at that sin thinking, that is not worth it. No way. And that's true of all sin, especially on a spiritual level. Would you count the cost? I don't care what the sin is. I don't care how much money it's going to make you. I don't care how good it's going to feel. It's not worth it. What you're going to have to pay. And here's the last thing that I'll say before I show you a couple more passages. Thinking about counting the cost, you know, we can see. We can be David in the movie where you hit pause and you see the sin and you think, I'd like to know how much that's going to cost me. You know how you can know how much your sin costs? You can see how much your sin costs every single time you look up on the cross and you see Jesus bleeding and suffocating to death. That's me. That's the cost of my sin. And if I could go back in time and take every single bit of it back, don't you know I would, after seeing the price that's got to be paid for it. We implore you on behalf of Christ, be reconciled to God for our sake. He made him to be sin who knew no sin, so that in him we might become the righteousness of God. Here's another one. Christ also suffered once for sins, the righteous for the unrighteous, that he might bring us to God, being put to death in the flesh, but made alive in the spirit. You have a choice to make. Tonight, tomorrow, whatever it is in your life, you have a choice to make. You can pay the price for your sin yourself. You will. That's a promise. You will pay the price for your sin yourself, or you can let Jesus take it for you and come to God through him in faith. You repent of the sin. Turn away from those things that have created this disaster in the first place, and live as best you can with God and his glory in mind, thanking Jesus every single day of your life for taking that cost so I don't have to. I know there's not an invitation song, and that this is not a time of invitation at the end on this Sunday night, but here's the thing. If you're somebody here tonight who has considered your own sin and you've thought to yourself, yeah, I don't want to have to pay for it. God has made a way so that you don't have to. It's a horrible way, but it's a way so that you don't have to. And I would implore with you, with Paul, to talk to one of the elders here or one of your friends who are here to say, what do I need to do to make that right now? It was really good to see you all tonight. Thank you for your kind attention and for opening your Bibles and studying with me. Until we see each other again, which I hope is very soon.